services for us?
That would be correct. I mean, I can't vouch for the excellent services, but our group is handling the administrative tasks.
Thank you. Okay, Keith. I think we have enough trustees for a quorum, but I'm not seeing our first presenter. Am I, or am I not seeing the whole list?
I don't believe she's joined yet either.
Hello, Anna.
Should we give her a few more minutes?
Hi there, everyone. Angel just left my office. So she is on the way to her desk right now. Sorry, you guys.
Hi, Anna.
Hi there. Bye.
Mr. Chairman, we do have a quorum, and you can call the meeting to order.
I would love to call the meeting to order then. It is on my clock, 3:03 p.m. on Wednesday, December 6th. Let's call this meeting of the City of Tucson PARS 115 Board of Trustees to order. I don't see an attendee list on, do we need to do a roll call or anything for this trust board?
Yes, sir, because we're virtual.
All right. Would you like me to do that, or did you want to handle that?
I can call the roll.
Thank you.
Keith.
Here.
Stacy.
Here.
Bill Davis.
Here.
Anna.
Here.
And Angel is on the way. We have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Great. The first agenda I have is updated cash flow presentation, financial report, and discussion. Angel, she should be here momentarily. We received the packet of information that she's going to present about an hour ago. It's interesting looking, and I'm excited to hear her presentation. And I see Angel on the list now.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
All right.
Hello,
Angel. Hello. Hi. Let me try to share my screen.
Thank you.
Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Good afternoon again. My name is Angela Zemelam. I am the new Business Services Director for the city, and it's a pleasure to present this report to the board this afternoon. Included in this report is the fiscal 23 and fiscal 24 to date numbers, financial report. I will be presenting to you a general fund, to you general fund projections and the trust cash flow projections. Okay, the financial management report as of June 30th, 2023. Returns on the trust were favorable. We collected $52 million, but I also would like us to note that we had $24.3 million of realized loss on investment during the fiscal year 2023. Our deductions were $36.2 million, with $35.7 million being paid out to PSPRS, leaving us with a net position at fiscal year end of $552.5 million. To date, as of November 30th, we have collected $3.3 million. We have interest, dividends, unrealized gain, and other income, totaling that $3.3 million. We've contributed $16.1 million to PSPRS with other administrative costs, bringing us to a total of $16.2 million of expenditures or deductions for the fiscal year up until the period ending November 30th, 2023, leaving us with a net position as of that date of $539.6 million. Okay, for this general fund projection, it's a little bit interesting because it is based on the cash flow that I will be presenting in a few minutes in the next slide. Essentially, this general fund projection assumes a $35.7 million funding from the trust fund. And that gives us a huge amount of resources coming out of the general fund to help support the UAL plus the other expenditures towards PSPRS outstanding obligations. And also included in those numbers is the the debt service amounts that are due yearly on the POB. I will go on to the trust numbers, and if you notice, I highlighted fiscal 24 because I do not think that anything beyond fiscal 24 is static. We know the market can change at any minute. We're expecting within the next 2 to 3 weeks to get a report from the PSPRS that would further affect our numbers, whether favorably or unfavorably, we do not know. Therefore, I would like the board to take into account only the projections we're making for the fiscal year 2024. The interest dividends or the resources coming in, we're projecting at $35.3 million, and that is based on interest rates of 6.8% and 0.6% of for investment fees. And also the projections assume that the payout to PSPRS will happen at the beginning of the year. And that is because we do not know what the market holds. This is what we're looking at right now that would possibly bring our net position at the end of fiscal year to $551.7 million. But we are not sure what the market holds for us. If we go up to fiscal 22 numbers, we notice we had unrealized loss of $111 million. If we look at fiscal 23 numbers, we had realized loss of $9.7 million. So there is we're trying to make room for the volatility of the market, and as such, I would caution us not to necessarily go further below fiscal 24 because these numbers may change, whether upwards or downwards. But we anticipate some changes as the year progresses. So I will pause here and entertain your questions, if you have any.
This is Keith. It has been a while since we've met, and so my understanding could be affected by the time between this meeting and our last meeting. But I My understanding of one of the purposes of the Section 115 trust was to minimize the impact on the general fund of the increasing pension payments, kind of stabilizing the effect of the pension system trying to get caught up to be closer to 80 or 90% funded rather than 35% funded, and that the purpose of the Section 115 trust was to minimize that effect on the general fund. And so I'm a little confused by the amount of general fund spending that's shown on the general fund projection, with the small and consistent amount being in the 115 trust. I would thought that the intent of this trust fund was for those to be flipped, where the trust fund was taking on the increased payments and keeping the impact on the general fund steady and consistent over time and not growing from 100 million to 132 million, for example, as those payments increase. Has anything changed, or am I misremembering?
I do not think that anything has necessarily changed, sir. However, you would note that I brought the unrealized loss in 22 and the realized loss in 23 to your attention, to the board's attention, noting that because we do not know what the next few months hold, we are being cautious as to how much we are projecting to expend out of the trust, understanding that if we should take a huge sum out of the trust right now, that may result in exactly what happened in 2023, that $9.7 million of realized loss. And hence the reason I ask that we not look beyond fiscal 24, because these numbers are subject to change based on the rate of returns that we would get by the end of fiscal year 24.
Okay, so when I'm comparing this revised cash flow for the trust fund to last year's revised cash flow for the trust fund, we were planning on spending the trust fund down to a zero balance by the 2040s, which was, I'm remembering the time when the public safety pension system, they were amortizing over that 25-year period to try and get everyone back to even. And we were planning for the trust to run out of money by then. And this doesn't look like we're planning on the trust ever running out of money.
And I understand
so that. That's where my question is kind of going, not just where we put the loss and what's happening with those future incomes, but what the future spending plan is out of the trust.
You are correct. And that was one thing that I called to discuss with our consultants. If we continue to fund at 35.7, we are looking at the trust never running out of resources. However, you would note that's the reason I highlighted fiscal 24, and I advise us not to go beyond fiscal 24 because we are not sure what the market holds for us. These numbers will be adjusted. As a matter of fact, we expect them to be adjusted within the next few weeks as we get the results of operations from PSPRS. So your question is legitimate, sir, and I am well aware of it.
So then I guess if I do get contacted and ask any questions about the 115 trust by a city council person or anyone, the plan is for the general fund to be picking up the bulk of spending and to be picking up $114 million, for example, in 2030 and not the 115 trust. Or you don't want me to look forward on the general fund projection either. I'm still a little confused.
That's correct. And I would like to note here from the, of course I am new, but from the little that I understand about the trust funds, the decisions to fund PSPRS from the trust is management's, and as such we expect those numbers to change over time. And again, because of the uncertainty of the market, I cannot give you anything beyond those numbers at the moment. But yes, I do realize that you're looking at what I'm looking at. You're looking at exactly what I'm seeing. So it's not, it didn't come as a surprise to me.
Okay. It does. All I guess I want to say then is it seems like a spending change has been made in a significant direction based on these forms. And you're right, that's not the trust decision on where that money's coming from or how it should be spent. But I'm just noticing a change in the plan. Okay. I see Stacy's hand up.
Thank you. I had a quick question just back on slide number 3, where it shows the June 30th year-end results.
Yes.
It looks like those are labeled unaudited. Are those at this point still unaudited in early December? When would you expect those June 30th results to be final audited? Are you underway with that right now?
We are underway with that right now. Yes, they are still unaudited.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are there any further questions for the Director of Financial Services and fellow trust, Jill? And did you have any more for your presentation then?
No, sir. That's it for me.
No questions here, Keith.
All right. I'm not hearing any additional questions. Thank you very much for that presentation. We appreciate that. That looks like the end of agenda item B. We can move on to agenda item C, investment performance review. We have two components, a yearly review ending at 6:30, and then the first quarter of fiscal 24, it looks like, is coming our way from Luke, I believe.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Nice to see all of you. Before I jump into the reports, I wanted to introduce my colleague, Dennis Mullins, who's also on the line. I'll let Dennis give an overview of his background, but by way of PFM Asset Management being purchased by U.S. Bank, what's happening is our institutional asset management business is being merged with their historic institutional asset management business, and as a result, we have some experienced professionals like Dennis that we will be working with on an ongoing basis. I'll continue to work on the city's account, but I wanted Dennis to come in as another person to help out, and Dennis essentially will be taking on the role of Ellen Clark. If you remember, some of you remember Ellen Clark worked with us in the city and helping set up this 115 trust, and she will be retiring in December. Dennis has a lot of experience working in Arizona with PSPRS 115 trusts and lots of entities in the state. So Dennis, if you could take a couple minutes to give an overview of your background, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. As Luke said, I'm Dennis Mullins. I've been with U.S. Bank for about 15 years now. I have about 40 years of experience managing institutional portfolios, the last 10 of which I've been focusing on OPEB assets and Section 115 trusts and working a lot with our colleagues at PARS. And I would like to let's see, my background is I started as a CPA many years ago, and then moved into the investment business as a portfolio manager, and then I went out and got my CFA charter, and as I mentioned before, I've got about 40 years of institutional experience. I'll be as we go forward, backing up Luke and helping out with your relationship and I'll be presenting in the reviews of the portfolio, performance reviews, market outlook, things of that nature. I look forward to working with all of you.
Great. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
Luke, can I just ask one quick question?
Yes, please.
Luke, I believe I've asked this before and again, it's been a while since we've had a meeting. U.S. Bank is also the holder of the assets, the trustee for the PARS 115 trust. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I'm assuming there are either built-in safeguards in this arrangement, or any conflict of interest issues aren't an issue with our trust, or how any of that works with now both our financial advisor and the holder of the trust funds have the same name?
That's a great question, and a question that we have fielded many times over the last couple of years. We have
probably for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries. No, it's a great question because GFOA best practice is to have a third party safekeeping or custody arrangement for public funds, and it's a question that we looked into very carefully before agreeing to be purchased by U.S. Bank, because close to 1,000 of our clients have custody with U.S. Bank. The reason for that was that we always knew that U.S. Bank custody did a great job for our clients. So we recommended them even when we were not affiliated. There are no conflicts of interest. There are safeguards and firewalls in place. And there's a different regulator for the two different sides of the bank. So the OCC regulates the custody side, and we're regulated by FINRA and the SEC. And U.S. Bank Institutional Management had many clients with U.S. Bank custody for a long time, even before purchasing PFM Asset Management. So, yes, there are safeguards in place. Happy to provide more information if that doesn't fully answer your question.
That fully answers my question. I have faith and trust in you. If I do get questions, though, Luke, I'm pointing them your direction.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. Thank you. Right.
Thank you very much.
Very good. So I have two reports to cover here today. What I thought might be most helpful is to cover the economic update of the most recent report, since more current economic data is always most helpful, then jump back to the June 30 performance, then cover the September 30 performance. Does that work for everyone? Great. Okay, so can you see my screen?
Yes.
Excellent.
I can.
Very good. So, looking at the third quarter growth rates, there's been a lot of the third quarter market review. There's been a lot of the same themes that have continued for most of the year. We saw inflation continue to cool. That's been the focus of the Federal Reserve, and monetary policy is certainly a focal point of the markets at this point in time. So it appears that the Fed is done increasing interest rates, at least for now. You can see the inflation rates have come down from their peaks of 2022, and have continued to moderate. The Fed acknowledges that there's a delay between monetary policy and the impact on the markets. And as a result, they've made the decision to pause. If you remember, they paused in June, then they increased rates once again in July, then they've held rates relatively steady. If we look back before the most recent inflation reading, there was an expectation that there was a chance of one more rate hike this year. However, once the data came in, that the inflation rates continued to move lower, we saw the chances of a rate increase move off of the table. Now the expectation is that we will see rate cuts will be the next change in terms of interest rate moves, and the market's projecting that those cuts would occur in May or July of next year, the first cut. So it appears that the increases in the Fed funds rate have resulted in tightening economic conditions and slowed inflation, which is what the Fed would like to see. Now the question is, can the Fed engineer this soft landing? So can they time their interest rate decreases correctly where we're not going to have a significant recession or any sort of significant economic downturn. If we look at GDP growth, this is our third quarter report. At that point in time, we didn't have the third quarter data. But for 2023, you could see a 3% growth rate in the first quarter, 2.9 in the second quarter. And, what really surprised market participants is the third quarter GDP rate, came in at 5.2% is the revised, rate. So it's really a surprise how strong the economy has continued to grow. If you think back to the beginning of this year, most economists were projecting a recession this year, and we certainly did not see a recession. We saw stronger growth than we've seen in several years. If we look at what that was driven by, a lot of it was the consumer. Consumer spending drives about 2/3 of our growth rate in the economy, and consumers continued to spend. They had high savings rate coming out of the pandemic, and now have essentially spent through that savings rate. So in terms of forward-looking expectations, it's not as clear where the consumer will be able to continue to spend. We're starting to see credit card balances increase broadly and savings rates move much lower. However, on the flip side, consumers and people that are employed in the workforce have seen some strong wage growth. So we've seen wage growth around 5% or so, and that could continue to drive some of that consumer spending. If we look at some of the other data, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index is an important component also because of what I mentioned, that the consumer spending makes up most of gross domestic product. The Consumer Sentiment Index moved quite a bit lower I'm clicking out here. It looks like it's blocking out my screen. But we've rebounded from those lows. I believe that was 2021, 2022. And now we've moved back higher from those lows. We can see that we're not alone with the interest rate increases that we've seen. We show some of the other developed countries around the world and their central bank rates. So inflation was a worldwide challenge, and we saw central banks around the world continue to increase their overnight rates as a result. So looking at the domestic equities in the portfolio, post a return of negative 3.27% for the third quarter of 2023, you're going to see that markets have been quite volatile. We're going to look at the September 30 returns overall here, and then we're going to jump back and look at the June 30 returns. The June 30 returns look better than the September 30 returns. However, if we look at the preliminary numbers today, November, markets bounce back quite a bit. So you're going to see some ups and downs through these reports as we're going through the different time periods. And that's essentially because markets have been volatile. Markets are really looking to see when we are going to have a recession, when the Fed is going to bring interest rates down to their long-term target of around 2.5% or 3%. And of course, all of the geopolitical issues we're seeing are playing an impact as well in terms of the uncertainty in the market. So that's a high level overview of the economic update. We have a lot more slides in here. We do have some details on alternatives as well. We can go through some of those details if it's helpful. I think what is a great chart to look at is factors to consider over the next 12 months, 6 to 12 months. This is essentially our heat map of the economy overall. Green meaning more favorable for economic growth. And we can see that overall nothing's in the far right category, right? And we do have a couple indicators that are near the far left category. So monetary policy, of course, is you know, not helping at this point in time intentionally to bring inflation down. The goal is to slow growth and slow inflation. So we're seeing increased interest rates, which results in higher borrowing costs and less growth overall. You know, economic growth bounced back partially because we saw strong economic growth numbers flow through. So the annual growth expectations have moved higher. Inflation is moderating. So if we look 6 months ago, we were in the orange or the red. It seems highly likely now that inflation is at or very near the Fed's target. And as a result, the Fed will start easing and becoming a little bit more dovish or moving interest rates lower. The financial conditions closely tracks monetary policy. And, you know, we did see the bank failures earlier this year. So there's still some fear in terms of financial conditions. Consumer spending, as I mentioned, is strong, as well as labor market. The labor market is extremely strong. Unemployment rate below 4%. You know, approximately 1.5 jobs available for every unemployed person in the economy. So the labor market continues to look very strong at this point in time. We are seeing a little bit of signs of softening over the last couple of months. So maybe not as strong as we were 6 months ago. However, still very strong overall. Corporate fundamentals are positive as well. We're seeing strong earnings growth. Profit margins did decline slightly. However, they're still at a healthy level. And valuations are in the slightly green. We can see international equities, as we note here, looked attractive to relative to historic valuations. However, there is continued economic uncertainty. And then political risks is in the far left, with, you know, the Middle East conflict, U.S.-China tensions, Russia-Ukraine war. So we're seeing some political risks there, certainly, that continue. So with that, happy to take any questions on the economic update before I jump into the performance report. Very good. So this is where I'm going to skip through some of the economic. Oh, Anna, I see you have your hand raised.
I do have my hand raised, and since I figured you might be paying a lot more attention to this than I do, can you talk about what's going on with energy prices very recently, and kind of how does that factor into, you know, things to consider over the next 12 months? What I'm seeing as a consumer is gas prices have gone down quite a lot. And historically, those energy costs were just kind of killing everybody. What was that, 12, 18 months ago? Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, sure. No, that's a good question. We energy prices have moved lower, and you know, we think what's important for consumers overall is their total basket of goods. So thinking about CPI made up of lots of different components. So energy has been a detractor over the last few months from CPI. So has not had a positive contribution to CPI. What we've seen, you know, you would think that with the Middle East conflict that, you know, we would see a spike in oil prices. You know, we haven't seen the impact flow through, and we haven't seen really production decline as a result of, you know, what's happening right now in the Gaza Strip area. So it hasn't expanded to some of the major oil producers at this point in time. So we're not seeing that flow through. We've also seen supply increase some in the United States of oil. So that increase in supply has resulted in some reductions in price. In terms of, you know, the expectation going forward, really, again, it's looking at the entire picture of what consumers are spending on, energy certainly being a component, but, you know, other food, right? Some of these non-discretionary items, you know, food being one of them, energy, you know, your housing costs, you know, all of those kind of roll into this total inflation gauge. So you notice that the consumer sentiment index that we showed had hit a low right around the same time that inflation had peaked. Well, that's not a coincidence because things are more expensive. People are not feeling very good, right? Eggs are now $10 for a dozen or whatever, you know, double what they were. We haven't seen the prices overall come down much. So you notice that the inflation growth rate is moving down, but we're not seeing a negative number there, which would actually result in prices coming down. We're just seeing a slowing of the increase, essentially. So consumers are starting to feel better overall, but it still will be a strain on consumer spending going forward, the fact that prices are so much higher now than they were 2 or 3 years ago. So it's one of the challenges, coupled with the fact that consumers have spent through all of their savings essentially at this point in time. That's why we're projecting that, you know, there's lower growth in 24 than in 23. And most economists are still projecting a recession in the next 12 months. Now, they were projecting that a year ago and they were wrong. But, you know, there's about a 60% chance if you look at the Bloomberg survey of all economists. It's like 500 something economists that project on average, it's more likely than not that we would have a recession in the next 12 months. So a lot of that's driven by the concerns around the consumer and the increased prices, including energy, which you referenced. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. I mean, I just, for as you know, as long as I've been doing this, conflict in the Middle East always meant gas prices were on the rise. That was always tough on consumers, tough on profitability in general, or all the businesses that transport things, all of that. And so I'm taking it from what you said, as long as the conflict doesn't spread, it's not really having an impact on oil producers. Is that what you're saying? And there's not really this projection that we're going to see some oil impact because of that, that's just a little delayed.
That's correct. Yes, that's okay. My understanding. Dennis, I'm not sure if you have any other color to add on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, everything Luke said, plus there's two things going on. OPEC can't agree on production limits right now. As prices are falling, OPEC is trying to cut back on production, and they're not getting agreement, especially from a couple of African nations that really don't want to cut back. The U.S. is a major producer now, which kind of softens the blow of any production cutbacks. And China's growth expectations are trending downward. And so the view is that there's going to be a lot less demand on, you know, on the visible supply of oil from China too. So a couple of things going on at once. Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dennis. Very good. So looking at the quarter end June 30, 2023, we show the returns of various market indices around the world. This is not the Citi's 115 trust portfolio. However, it's helpful to look at where returns were broadly before looking at your individual portfolio returns. So if we look at the domestic equity returns, very strong performance over the last year and over the quarter. So close to 20% in the S&P 500 June to June. If we look at what performed the best, Russell 1000 growth had very strong performance. So growth outperformed, and Russell 1000 is more companies in the 500. So what that means is small cap was generally, helpful to performance as well, because as you get lower, as you add more companies to an index, you're getting to mid cap and small cap companies, overall. If we look at international equities, also had strong 1 year performance. The quarter to date performance, not quite as strong. Some of those geopolitical risks were worrisome to investors overall. The alternatives over the year had a negative return. So I think this is helpful, you know, when we're thinking about going back to some of your points, Keith, of, you know, a diversification component of this trust. This trust really did its job over the last year in terms of diversification. If you think about PSPRS, the majority of PSPRS is invested in alternatives, about 54%. We didn't see a negative return out of PSPRS, but we saw a lower return than in the 115 trust portfolio over the last year. And a lot of that was driven by alternatives. So if you remember 9 months ago when we met, that our expectation was that we would start to see some of the markdowns in the alternatives. And we have seen that, through June and even, and now there are more markdowns occurring within, the private alternatives and even the widely, seen, market indices of alternatives, which you can see here. So alternatives overall had a negative return. Commodities, had the worst return. So Anna, to your point, you know, the commodities, prices have decreased even over the year from June 3022 to June 3023. Fixed income, generally had low to negative returns. And that's because the Fed continued to increase interest rates. As interest rates rise, the value of, fixed income securities, falls. And that's what we continue to see, over the year. So negative returns in fixed income, the double-edged sword, if you will, of fixed income is you see these negative returns when interest rates rise. But the positive or the other side of the sword is that you're now, highly likely to have stronger earnings rates going forward. We're certainly seeing that in the city's operating portfolios where we're earning close to 5% now, in fixed income. And you can see cash and cash equivalents had a strong return. They're highly linked, highly correlated to the Fed funds rate. So we saw a 3.6% return in the 90-day U.S. Treasury bill, which is a cash equivalent measure. I'm going to flip through the June economic update since we covered the more recent September economic update. And if we look at the one-year return for the portfolio, 10.67%. So a strong return for the one-year return. The quarterly return was 3.92%. However, we underperformed the benchmark under both of those metrics. And the reason we underperformed the benchmark, there were a couple reasons, but the main driver was the international equity performance was negative relative to the benchmark. So as you know, we're actively monitoring and selecting investment managers within these different allocations in the overall asset allocation. We saw some of the international funds not perform as well as the benchmark. However, over the long term, some of these funds have continued to offer value. We did make some changes since the June report and adjustments to the holdings and the international holdings. The other reason that we underperformed the benchmark is because we did not expect the bank failures that we saw in the second quarter or the end of the first quarter of 2023. The bank failure, Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic, and others that, you know, experienced a lot of challenges resulted in tighter lending standards to small cap companies. We had an overweight to small and mid cap companies, and they underperformed because of the banking failures we saw and the impact on smaller companies. Large companies have the ability to issue corporate bonds and are not as reliant upon bank lending. So the large cap component was not as impacted by the bank failures that we saw. So those really, to sum it up, those are the two reasons that there's underperformance versus the benchmark. You will see that's flipped and there's outperformance in the September report. We don't expect to outperform every quarter, however, we strive to, and if you look at our performance, going back over the last 10 years, through market cycles, we have outperformed. If we look at that 1 year return, 10.67. It's nice to see a bounce back, from the previous year, as well. So if we look, we can scroll down and we can see that the other component was the cash and cash equivalents. Again, those had a similar return to what you saw in the broad market index.
Luke, can I ask you a couple of questions about these two pages we just
looked at? Yes, please.
I remember last time we looked at these, the column headings confusing me, and they're confusing me again a little bit. Like that since inception column. If yes. That's the performance of the trust since the very beginning of the trust, that number looks too good. And so I'm not sure that I understand what I'm seeing in these numbers in the performance columns, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years since inception.
Well, I'm glad you think
that. Is that minus 1.31% actually the overall loss since we first began this fund? Is that correct?
That is correct. And I'm glad you think that looks too good to be true, because we're not happy with that number. However, we can't control the overall markets. We can only control our performance relative to the benchmark. And again, that is we're not outperforming at this point in time. However, we're confident over the long run we'll get back to outperformance. So this number has bounced back. If you remember last time we looked at it, we were probably -6 or -7%. And that's to the point that markets are very volatile right now. You'll see a more negative number in September on the September report. However, I just talked with the portfolio manager for the city's portfolio before this call, and you're back to essentially zero at this point because November was a very strong month for markets. So you're going to see a more negative number in September. Then if things hold through December, where they are at the end of November, you'll be back to even or hopefully in the positive by the end of December.
I was just thinking back to the presentation before by our trustee Angel, and there was a $111 million loss. We've recovered back from there. I didn't think we'd gotten all the way back to only a 1.3% loss since inception. So that is making me happy if that number is correct.
This number is correct. And part of the difference in the cash balance you're seeing is that money did leave the trust. So we're not back to this, even though the return is back to even, money left, which results in a lower overall balance, if that helps to put the pieces together.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. But I think it shows, that this portfolio is going to bounce around over time, and it's not a 1 year or a 2 year or a 3 year strategy. It was a 20-year strategy to start with. And, I think three to 5 years from now, you're going to look back and it's highly likely that you'll see positive returns over the long term. And that was really, the strategy to begin with. We're now a couple years in, and it's difficult to predict any type of return, but especially a two or short term type of return. And so this 1 year, 2 year return is whatever, just to review, is from June. So this would be June 30, 22, and then this would be June 30, 21 to June 30, 23 for this 2 year return. The year to date is calendar year to date, so it's 6 month period, and then the quarter is March 31 to June 30.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So if we have the slides on the allocations, I'll go through some of that when we get to the June report. However, I did want to show the 1 year return for PSPRS. I know that's always a question we receive. So 10.67 was the return in the 115 trust. PSPRS return 7.6% for that same period. So there was outperformance in the 115 trust. And again, a lot of that was driven by the PSPRS allocation to alternatives and the fact that we saw those alternatives finally start to be marked down in line with public markets.
Wait, so I'm sorry, can you explain what I'm seeing? What did this 1 year number?
So this is the PSPRS total investment return number. So this is PSPRS returns from June 30, 2022 to June 30, 2023 at 7.6%. That's the equivalent of the 10.67% 1 year return that we looked at on our report.
And so, and then these 3 year, 5 year, 7 year, 10 year is going back historically with performance?
That's correct.
And in the chart below, you're comparing to your system benchmark and not to our actual results.
This is the PSPRS system benchmark.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yes. Now, this isn't comparing it to our results. It's comparing how they did compared to how they wanted to do.
That's correct. So okay, if we want to compare ours to theirs, it's the 7.6 to the 10.67. The 3 year of 10.3, we don't quite have a 3 year performance track record yet on your portfolio.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. So any questions on the June 30 report before I move to the rest of the September 30 report? Any other questions that weren't asked along the way? Thanks for the questions along the way.
Not here.
Very good.
I see Anna's hand up.
Oh, I couldn't see that one. Yes, Anna?
Luke, you, so when we talk about PSPRS, and I mean, we had talked about their alternatives and the difficulty of, you know, marking those to market. Kind of as you presented a little bit, you talked about them taking additional markdowns. Mm-hmm. Is that information that they're taking those markdowns now for their year-end reports, or is that something that the board has been discussing or talking about results or values in their portfolio sort of post June 30th?
So neither, actually. It's a good question. It's based on what we're seeing in financial markets broadly. So that's not information from PSPRS. However, I do know that PSPRS has alternative allocations to commodities and to real estate. Both of those have underperformed public markets pretty significantly over the last quarter. Now, it will likely take time for those returns to flow through as well. You know, some of their portfolio is going to perform in line or better than the 115 trust as well. They have a domestic equity allocation. They have some private equity investments, which are likely to do well. They also have a floating rate component to their portfolio, which was doing well up until interest rates fell by about 50 basis points here. But most of the quarter, their return should be relatively strong within the floating rate component. However, it's likely that the real estate and commodities are going to more than offset that. And what we're seeing broadly in markets is that alternatives are still seeing these markdowns flow through from, you know, 12, 18 months ago. It takes a lot of time, especially with real estate. They have to get an appraisal and, you know, run that through, and that can change very quickly as well. So it's not based on any information from PSPRS. It's based on our expectation based on what we're seeing elsewhere, essentially. So I wish we had the 930 returns for PSPRS, then we could compare.
Thank you.
And Luke, this is Keith again, do they have discretion on when they report those markdowns, or is that just how things flow through the system when the timing of their recognizing the markdowns? How much of that's discretionary on their part, when to recognize that?
So none of it is discretionary on the part of PSPRS. However, it is discretionary on the part of the individual managers to some extent. So there is some flexibility with the real estate managers, for example. They, since they're not a publicly traded fund, they're not held to the same mark-to-market requirements that public funds are. So yeah, an Apple stock, which is in your portfolio, you can see where it trades every single day, right? But a private real estate fund that has leverage and, you know, several different properties, you could get an appraisal one day and it's one level and it could change drastically very quickly, or you could see stale data. And as a result, they have some flexibility with how they move those markdowns through to their clients, their client being PSPRS in this case.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I think I jumped back and forth. There we go. So now if we look at the third quarter return, we did see slightly negative returns for the third quarter. So negative 3% for the quarter. The 1 year decreased in line actually increased here because we were picking up a different period of time. We dropped 3 months, which was helpful. So the 1 year returned 13.45%, even though that 1 quarter returned negative 3. However, overall, since you added subtracted a 3% number from the last data we saw since inception, that moved the since inception number slightly lower to negative 2.39 over that period of time. However, I will point out we outperformed the benchmark in September. So again, you know, when we're looking at these returns, the goal is to outperform the benchmark. We had some underperformance over the last few quarters. And now over the last two quarters, we've outperformed, which is a result of some of the changes we made after the bank failures that we saw earlier this year and, the active managers within the portfolio. So international equities had a worse return than domestic, negative 4.21. As Dennis mentioned, you know, China's seeing some challenges, and I think that's spreading, you know, fears, if you will, and valuation concerns to other international, holdings, even though we don't have a large allocation to China, or actually any allocation to China within our managers. Looking at fixed income, interest rates rose slightly from June to September, which resulted in negative returns for the fixed income sector. And that's essentially because inflation moved slightly higher for a couple months, and there was this talk from the Fed of higher for longer, keeping the Fed funds rate higher for longer, and that resulted in interest rates moving up, which brought bond prices down. So we saw some negative returns for the quarter. Over the year, positive returns since inception, negative, because we did see, you know, the fastest pace of interest rate increases in about 40 years over that period of time since inception. So if we look, we can look at, I think it's helpful to look at where the portfolio is structured today. And I'll point out a couple items. One is fixed income. As of the end of September, there was a slight underweight. So this shows where your portfolio is structured, thinking from the very high asset allocation level, relative to the benchmark. And these are, tweaks that PFM is making on your behalf on an ongoing basis based on where we think there's relative value in the market. And right now we're generally in line with benchmarks for the most part, as you can see. However, there are a couple slight intentional differences, which are overweighting equities slightly. Most of that in domestic equities, as you see. So 2.7% overweighting in domestic equities, and a slight overweighting in international equities. That's because we're underweighting fixed income slightly and the cash equivalents component just slightly as well. The fixed income underweight, essentially because the trend has been for higher interest rates, which will likely result in lower returns for fixed income. We're coming near to the end of that. So some of the most recent investment committee decisions have talked about taking off that overweight to equities from fixed income. So that's on the table and is something that you might see on the fourth quarter report, that we potentially move that back to where we're in line with the fixed income targets. The cash equivalents, slightly below the 5% target. If you remember when we started this fund, there was a 5% target, and through conversations with the city staff, it was determined that we can sharpen the pencil a little bit and don't necessarily need all of that 5% in cash at all times. We're in the process of working with Art and his team on building out a more detailed cash flow for this fund. We'll likely have something to present at the next meeting to give this group an update on, you know, what the flows to PSPRS look like in terms of that minimum annual requirement. And that will help provide some clarity around your questions on the balance as well. So with that, happy to take any questions on the third quarter performance report, if there are any, or anything else.
Luke, this is Keith. So the city has a specific policy that it has enacted that is prescribing guidelines for you to follow when you're investing our trust funds.
Yes.
That's my understanding. I have that policy somewhere in my notebook. I haven't read it in detail recently. I haven't compared it to these investment percentages or these specific investments. I guess the question I'm going to ask, and I'm probably going to ask it at every one of these meetings, is some assurance from you that the way you are investing these funds is directly in line with the city's policy that governs how they would like these funds to be invested. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so we have a target in terms of the allocations to each of these different sectors that you see here. We also have a range that we're allowed to work within to adjust the portfolio as we see fit, when we see value in certain areas and we don't see value in other areas. So the overall allocation is 70% equities, 30% fixed income, and we make slight deviations from that over time.
And so then if I go back to that policy and I compare these types of investments and these, the target allocation and the minimum and maximum, those are the numbers I'm going to see in that city policy. And here you're showing me that your actual allocation is within those ranges that's required.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I will show you, just because I received it earlier today, the performance through November. It's not formatted great, but I thought you might like to see, back to the point of volatile returns, the stock market was up significantly in November. Your portfolio had a preliminary, this is not the final number yet, we're still working on, you know, the fund calculations and whatnot, but it's likely to not change much from this. The 1 month return in November, 7.6%. Which I was really hoping I was going to be able to tell you brought the inception number into the green. We're almost there, though. We're only negative 0.06 at this point in time. So I think if we ran it today, we might see a positive there, because the market's up just slightly, over the last few days. So I thought you would like to see, the hot off the presses number as well. You know, just for your information and to the point, Keith, that it's going to jump around, you know, over time. And really it's to that long-term strategy. One of the things we would like to do with this group at some point is review the asset allocation. I know you weren't part of coming up with the investment policy statement. I've talked with Anna and, you know, we were prepared to do it for this meeting, but it's been so long since we met. We thought it'd be helpful just to stick to the reports for this meeting. It's going to take some time to go through that asset allocation study. Hopefully we have time in 2024 to dig a little bit deeper the cash flow, you know, component in terms of the required contribution can be included, as well as looking at the allocation to equities, fixed income. What does that look like? Should it be adjusted over time? You know, of course we'll come with recommendations from our perspective as well, and lots of information for all of you. So hopefully we can plan that at some point in 2024.
Did we also at some point, this is Keith again, think about comparing regularly our performance to the PSPRS performance? And is that what that one chart in your package was intended to help us do?
Yes. Yes, it was. And yes, that will certainly be part of the conversation. Essentially, we've underperformed slightly since inception. We outperformed over the last year, and we've outperformed when you look at a 10-year return. So, you know, it's a balance. I think what will also be important to look at is how does the performance look quarter to quarter? So part of the point of this trust is to balance the risk in PSPRS, and we would hope that the returns don't just move together, right? And we're seeing that they don't move together. So that will be an important point to look at as part of that study as well.
Thank you. Yes. Did we have any additional questions for Luke? And Luke, did you have any more? Was that the complete presentation?
That was the complete presentation on my end.
I appreciate that. Did we have any additional questions for Luke or anyone from PFM Asset Management? All right. Thank you very much, Luke. We appreciate it.
Thank you all. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. That brings us to our next agenda item, which is agenda item D, the trust review as of 6:30 and 10:31, 2023. If we have PARS available and ready to take on their presentation, it would be lovely if you do that. I see it on the screen. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Maureen Toll with PARS, the trust administrator. I'm the executive vice president at PARS, and I've got somewhere in there Charlie Francis, who's the consultant and supports the relationship, and also for the first time Stacy Tao, who's involved with all our Section 115 trusts in Arizona, and so she's sitting on this call as well. For this part of the agenda, I'm going to present the trust activity. PARS, as the trust administrator record keeper, we do the monthly statements and reporting to the city, as well as the annual reports, and just finished up the audit for the trust that we do on the whole trust. And I think we're going to be sending that out this week. But if you go to the next slide here. Just as a reminder, PARS is the trust administrator and consultant on this. We went with U.S. Bank to the IRS to get a private letter ruling, the first of its kind to allow for these types of trusts, and then later worked to make sure this became legal in Arizona as well as other places. And so that was in 2016. And we do the, as I mentioned, the count valuations, which I'll go through, and processing the contributions, disbursements, making sure they're in compliance with the trust law, all the trust document management, the state and federal compliance and such. And then U.S. Bank serves as the trustee and custodian and safeguarding the funds and such. And they discuss that the new arrangement with U.S. Bank's acquisition of PFM. And Dennis Mullins, who's worked quite a lot with us, as we have over 330 of these types of trusts for pension, to set aside funds for pension costs. And Dennis is involved with a number of them. So between Luke's experience and Dennis's support on coming over from the U.S. Bank Institutional Investments, I think that definitely adds some strength to the team here. If we go to the next slide. So just to summarize it. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I, again, get a little bit confused with I'm on a couple boards where the enabling legislation or the enabling types of documents, like what sets up this 115 trust, requires an oversight trust and trustees like us. For example, if you're going to self-insure as a government in Arizona, you have to have a self-insurance trust fund with a trust board with some requirements that come from the state laws. There's nothing in this setup that requires this trust board and requires any responsibilities for us to do as trustees, right? We are outside of this setup and regulation and legislation, correct?
That's correct. When the city council approved this trust, you are not involved in that, but the city council approved this trust that in essence delegates corporate trustee responsibilities for the Section 115 trust to U.S. Bank. In essence, U.S. Bank is serving as the trustee and to make sure that the trust is in compliance with the trust, or the city's activities are in compliance with the trust agreement, and then the trust is operated for the exclusive benefit of the employees and retirees and beneficiaries. U.S. Bank is serving as the trustee in this regard.
So we're serving basically at the pleasure of the city council and not any other external party expecting us to do anything that you're aware of.
Yeah, that's
okay, cool.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. So here's a summary of the trust activity. I'm going to go back to the beginning. This is as of through October 31st, which is the last evaluation. Luke mentioned investment returns for November, and we don't have the valuation on it, but this is the latest valuation. And then I'll also go over the end of the plan year, the fiscal year, the June 30th numbers. But as mentioned, the trust type, the plan type, is a IRS Section 115 irrevocable exclusive benefit trust. Irrevocable means it can only be used for pension costs, either to the city can direct funds to go to PSPRS, any defined benefit plan under the IRS rules, or reimburse itself for its pension costs that send validation of that to PARS, and PARS directs U.S. Bank to distribute those funds. But that's what's allowed under the trust agreement. So it's irrevocable exclusive benefit, meaning that the trust is for the exclusive benefit of the employees, retirees, and beneficiaries. So there's responsibility there to make sure that that there is nothing that goes on that is not in the interests of the ultimate beneficiaries of the trust, which are those that receive the pensions. And the effective date is January 5th, 2021. That's when the city council approved the trust. The plan administrator to deal with technical issues, signing documents, forms, and such is a position, which is the business services director. And it's currently in a customized portfolio with PFM. The initial contribution, March 2021, was $645 million based on the bond issuance. Additional contributions since that time are $107 million. Total contributions have been $752 million, approximately. Disbursements of $152 million have been made, and expenses for the trust are $1.4 million. Total earnings as of this time was $53.6 million. And the account balance as of October 31st is $544,766,316. And I'll go into a little more detail about this in the next slide. So this slide is a bit busy, but basically what we're showing here is by quarter, since the inception of the trust and the funding of the trust, the contributions that were made, and you can see the, in terms of contributions, the initial contribution, and then since that time, if you go down to the quarter ending September 30th, 2022, so right after the start of the fiscal year, there was additional contributions of just over $43 million. And then the quarter ending 6/30/2023, additional contributions were made of about $6.6 million. And then in this last quarter, $57 million was made, and that's $57 million is the annual contribution for the pension to PSPRS, and distributions are being made bi-monthly based on payroll as a reimbursement to the. Not a reimbursement, but sending on to PSPRS. So they've basically front loaded at the beginning of the fiscal year, the annual contributions, and then directing the trust to pay disbursements to PSPRS, each payroll period. So twice a month. So, the distributions, as you can, see here, the first distributions to the trust were made in the quarter March 31st, 2022, approximately almost 35 million, $34.9 million. And then again, a small, distribution was made for $2.1 million on 6/30/2022, quarter ending, and then 9/30/2022, $83,396,000. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble reading that. 89.3 million was made, and those were disbursements to PSPRS that were made, I believe. And then again, all these were disbursements to PSPRS. And so most recently, the September 30th, 2023, as I mentioned, there's ongoing twice a month disbursements being made to PSPRS now, and so on. And investment returns are shown in a flat dollar amount for each of these quarters. And you can see the quarters where there were losses and the quarters where there were gains. The June 30th, 2021 quarter, that quarter, the first two quarters were gains. The 9/30/2021, some losses, and 3/31/2022, 6/30/2022, and 9/30/2022. So those three quarters there were losses, and since that time, there's been gains, investment earning gains, and then the FARS fees, the PFM fees, and the U.S. bank fees are broken out by each of the quarters and so on, and so the total expenses are shown in that last column, and the ending balances. So there's a lot there, that's the summary of the activity since the inception of the trust. Do you have any questions about that?
This is Keith. I just wanted to say I loved that chart and that account summary. I appreciate the information. It makes sense and helps me know what's going on. So I liked the summary a lot. Thank you.
And we can provide as much detail in future meetings as you need on this. Obviously, it's an investment committee meeting, but it's important to understand what's going on with the activity, the valuations of the trust and such. So.
I did have one question about how much of this is voluntary and how much of this is mandatory. I'm remembering a conversation from a year ago. The city has elected to transfer its general fund support to the trust and have the trust pay it to PSPRS in this way, or is this a mandatory requirement?
It is not mandatory. Art can speak to that maybe. Yeah.
And then if you're going to speak to this, is this the the intended way that all the funding is going to happen and made once a year in this disbursement. And if there's additional funding that the city chooses to pay to PSPRS rather than the monthly amounts based on payroll, would that go through this trust the same way?
Mr. Chairman, what I can say to that is this year being FY24.
Correct.
The city decided to make its part of its annual pay, its annual required contribution to the 115 trust rather than to PSPRS. And I believe that decision was made to capture the interest earnings and the investment earnings that, Luke reflected in his presentation. What we're doing now is taking those biweekly employer amounts and paying them from the trust to PSPRS on a biweekly basis. I cannot speak to what we might or potentially do in the future. I would, and maybe Anna or Angel will jump in here as far as the plan. To the extent that the trust fund continues to perform at its current trajectory, then I would anticipate the city utilizing this strategy in future fiscal years. But I can't confirm that. Anna?
Yeah, and I guess what I would say, we did have a change in strategy from our perspective, and you can kind of see it in this table. The city had for a number of years been fronting the general fund contribution early in the fiscal year, in that July timeframe, sending a large chunk of money to PSPRS for close to the entire, fiscal year amount, knowing that in these types of investment systems, they can get higher earnings than our general fund could. And so it was really an effort to maximize, put our money in the best place to get the highest interest earnings. And so I believe that's what you see kind of on that September of 2022 line. You see reflected a large contribution from the city that went to PSPRS early in the fiscal year. This year, because of the positive results that we saw, our 115 is out earning the PSPRS portfolio. We said, well, let's do the same thing. Let's get the money out of the general fund and into a better investment vehicle. And that's really our 115 trust. And so we front loaded a large portion of money into this trust, and then it will trickle out in the required contributions associated with our payroll to PSPRS. I think we're going to try to be nimble and try to put our money in the best spot. And so I can see us, making those types of decisions as situations develop with these investments.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes, and then just about June 30th, which is the end of your fiscal year, the trust balance, which is shown on the financial statements, will be $552,513,000. And so I don't know if we have the statement there, but nonetheless, we're provided in the packet. So you can see that the final fiscal year end trust statement that's used for the auditing and financial statements as well is in there, is in your packet.
I noticed that the ending number matched. This is Keith again. I also noticed that the beginning, there might have been a timing issue with that $2.1 million. The beginning number wasn't quite right or didn't. They were very close. Yeah. So thank you.
Okay. And this is the team from U.S. Bank and PARS that's involved in supporting the trust administration. Any other questions that you might have?
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. All right. If there aren't any other questions about the trust review, we can move on. And thank you again to administrative discussions. Item E1 is the 2024 board calendar meeting schedule. Art, did you have anything to propose? Did you want to start the discussion? What?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been several references to the fact that the board hasn't met for quite some time this year. And I wanted to determine whether the board wanted to get back to more regular quarterly meetings beginning in 2024. If so, what I would recommend doing is establishing somewhere around 6 or 7 weeks after the end of the quarter. That'll allow Luke and his team to provide and get the quarter end reports ready. They usually send them over to me, and then we'll distribute those reports out to the board. So what that might look like, just loosely, when we were meeting a year ago, it seemed to be that Mondays were a good day for most on the committee to meet. So I've loosely mapped out the four Mondays in 2024, 6 or 7 weeks the following quarter end, which would be Monday, February 12th, May 13th, August 12th, and November 11th. Again, we can tentatively plan on these. You can put them on your calendar. The afternoons generally worked. I think we were meeting from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. So if the board wants to get back to regularly scheduled quarterly meetings, I think that allows all of the consultants working on the investment plans and Maureen's group to provide us with the requisite information that will then allow me time to get out the information to the board. That is not an hour or 6 hours before the board meets. I generally like to give you more time to review the documents. So I think that provides enough time. So alternatively, if the board just wants to meet as needed, we were happy to entertain that as well. But I felt like getting back on a regular schedule would be beneficial for the board.
This is Keith. I would perhaps like to join this discussion with the next sub-item, the creation of an investment subcommittee. I know what I don't like is going an entire year with no information at all. I don't mind having annual meetings if we were to get quarterly information or had an investment subcommittee that met quarterly. You know, if I were receiving, for example, the account summary statement that was presented by PARS, if I got that quarterly and there was nothing jumping out at me at being exciting, I think I would be happy with our annual meetings, especially if we had an investment subcommittee that maybe got some more detailed information quarterly. I also love the idea of the full board meeting quarterly, but I don't want it to be too ominous on everyone or too much of a responsibility or us meeting more frequently than necessary. So I kind of think if the board is going to meet quarterly and have a meeting like this, which I would appreciate and enjoy, I'm not sure that an investment subcommittee is necessary. If the board wants to continue, I would like us to have an annual meeting scheduled and not just meet as necessary. And if we do that, then I might like to have, if not an investment subcommittee, quarterly reports distributed, and we can determine if an ad hoc meeting is needed before the next annual meeting based on that information that's being presented. But that's, I'm just saying all of this to kind of get the topic started, unless someone wants to move to do Art's meeting schedule, and then I don't think we need an investment subcommittee. But I'd love to hear what the other trustees think.
I would support that. This is Stacy. Keith, I do like the idea of meeting more frequently. I also support the idea of if we do go to a quarterly basis, I don't know that there's necessarily a need for an investment committee. We're already a small committee of 5 members. And so, you know, I feel if we're able to meet at least on a quarterly basis or at the most on a quarterly basis, we can keep up to date with the performance of the fund and eliminate the need for another separate group of meetings.
I would agree.
Does anyone else have any thoughts? And Art, does this need to be an action item, approving a tentative quarterly schedule like that? Or are we just going to schedule this and rely on you to get this going, and we don't need, do I need a motion and a vote for what we're doing here?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because like you, I did not receive the city clerk's public notice statement as I usually do. So to really cover my butt, I'm going to request that the board move to adopt a quarterly meeting schedule. It doesn't have to, we don't have to set the dates, but we can generally say the 7 weeks following quarter end, we'll schedule a quarterly meeting.
All right, then. So I would love to hear any additional information from any of the trustees, what their thoughts are. And if no one has further discussion and likes the quarterly idea meeting, I would love to entertain a motion to have regularly scheduled meetings quarterly, approximately 7 weeks after the end of a quarter, and with the city putting those dates together, something similar to what Art recommended.
So moved. This is Stacy.
I'll second.
I didn't hear who the second was.
Is that Mr. Bill? Davis.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. So what I have is a motion from Stacy Lemos to have the board meet quarterly, to have those quarterly meetings be approximately 7 weeks after the end of a quarter, and likely trying for that first Monday, which might be February 12th, May 13th, August 12th, and November 11th, but those are tentative dates. The goal of the motion is to meet quarterly and be approximately 7 weeks after the end of the quarter. That's the motion and the second. If there's any discussion or debate. I am hearing no discussion or debate, so what I would like to do is call for a vote now. And I think we can, I would like, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Are there any votes not in favor? I would like to hear those now. I'm not hearing any opposed votes, so I believe our motion has passed unanimously with the support of all five trustees to meet quarterly, approximately 7 weeks after the end of a quarter, to give everyone time to prepare, and that Monday afternoons have worked great and might work for those dates. Good?
Good.
Pretty good.
All right. So then that was both administrative discussions, the 2024 board calendar meeting schedule and the creation of the investment subcommittee were blended in there. I guess I'll ask again if anyone feels the need to have an investment subcommittee if the entire trust board is meeting quarterly. I'm not hearing that.
I don't think so.
We'll move on to agenda item F, which would be call to the audience. If there are any audience guests here or anyone else who would like to be a member of the audience and speak now, now would be the time. Please let me know. I see a hand raised. Nathan Weber.
Good afternoon, everybody, for the 115 Trust Board. My name's Nate Weber. I'm a captain with the Tucson Fire Department. And I just, I appreciate your time today and you guys meeting today. I know it's been quite some time. Just as Luke said, it's probably pretty important that, the performance and the fund and the workings of the fund are reviewed on a quarterly basis. And I know that it's been almost a year. That being said, as I listen to some of the conversation, I do have some questions. The first question I have is, it seems very apparent that we are, or that this 115 trust is trying solely to compete with the returns and the benchmarks of the PSPRS fund. That being said, I think that the intent of both of those funds, the funding and the rules that apply to how those funds can be invested, are uniquely different. I think that when we're comparing the interest gains or losses, One of the pieces that I felt was fairly interesting to note is as Luke was giving his update to the board, he said that the 115 trust had a gain of 10.67%. My question to that is, does that include all of the administrative fees, the oversight, the audit? Does that include any money management, any of the investment fees that go with that? Is that gross or net? And with that, he stated that PSPRS had a return of 7.6, although he said that was only assumed because they don't have PSPRS's final numbers or reports yet. So from what I gather from that, it was easily assumed the performance versus the performance between the fund and PSPRS. The only other piece that I'd like to add is I feel like one of the pieces that is being overlooked is this is not just managing a 115 trust fund and looking at the performance of the fund, whether it's gains or losses. This money was intended to pay down the unfunded liability of the PSPRS fund for the city of Tucson. That fund funds the pensions for all of our police and firefighters, both active and retired, and those who haven't even begun yet. In doing so, we're not only comparing performance between one or the other, the fact that the city of Tucson's fund for the fire department within PSPRS is funded to a rate of 35.2%, and TPD's fund within the city of Tucson and PSPRS is funded at 34.2%, that makes our funding status the lowest in the state of Arizona. That does not take into account the $552 million that's sitting in the 115 trust fund. We all are aware that that money is sitting there. However, that does not change the funding status of the plan. My point to that is that the funding status of the plan sets the employer contribution rates. So whether we're looking at performance of increases or losses, gains or losses, the amount that we have that's in this fund, one of the things that's not being discussed is how much the city of Tucson is paying for their employer contribution rates being affected by them being funded so lowly. That being said, currently, the city of Tucson pays 78.38% for fire employees for their employer contribution. They pay 92.18% for TPD for their employer contribution. Those are also some of the highest employer contribution rates in the state of Arizona. So my point is, if this money was to be transferred to PSPRS, it would substantially decrease their employer contribution rates, thus increasing a tremendous amount of money, tens of millions of dollars in the general fund, but also increasing the funding status of the city of Tucson's PSPRS fund, both for police and fire. That was all that I had. I know that there was some questions in that. I know there was some stuff that I mentioned in that. But I feel that the funding status affecting the employer contribution and the money that's being paid for the employer contribution for both police and fire is something that's not being considered or taken into the equation, as we're only looking at the interest returns to the fund.
Art, I'm going to ask, thank you very much for your comments, Nathan. I appreciate them. Art, I need some help here. I know we're not allowed to take any actions, it's not on the agenda. I am unfamiliar with whether we are allowed to specifically comment or address any issues brought up by the audience during this section of the meeting. Am I allowed to address any of this briefly, or is this only for the questions to be asked and the statements to be made, and then we consider whether additional items are brought up at future meetings to address these? How does that work?
Yeah, I don't think that you can address questions that were agendized So if the committee member, if the member of the audience is addressing an item that was specifically agendized, the board cannot comment or refute comments that were made by the member of the audience. The board can put anything that they would like on a future agenda item for additional discussion, if they so choose, based on comments from the audience.
Keith and Art, this is Nate again. I don't need any answers to my questions. I'm pretty sure I know most of the answers already. The biggest thing that I wanted to bring just to the board's attention is to consider the amount, not only the gains or losses in the fund, not only interest earned, not only competing against PSPRS for their gains or losses, but to realize both of those funds are uniquely different for a totally different strategy, for a totally different length of time, and to fund something that's fairly. What I wanted to bring up was the fact that the funding status of the City of Tucson's PSPRS fund for both police and fire is affected by what the board chooses to do with this money. That funding status determines the City of Tucson's employer contribution rates, which then sustain or shore up the security of the PSPRS fund, but also free up money within the general fund due to the amount of money that could be changed by the unfunded status of both of those plans. That was all. Let that be considered as well.
Nate, what I'd like to tell you is that I appreciate your saying that, and I know that those topics are on the mind of myself, and I imagine all of the other trustees on the board. I will say this. I know that PSPRS is planning on staggering their rates over a period of time to get a much better funded portion for all people involved, and that's going to increase costs on a lot of governments in Arizona. I do want to make sure, Nate, that you're aware that the Section 115 trust is lawfully restricted to only be funding your pension. And so if you're looking at that, a 35% funding rate, if you include the Section 115 trust in there, because it is restricted heavily to only that pension that you get, that those funds should be considered in anyone looking at the city's pension to determine how well it's funded, not just the amount that's in the payroll system, specifically with PSPRS, but the 115 trust is restricted for the same purpose. And I think the retirement plan is better funded because of that than just the information that's available from the system. And if I've made any errors in that statement, I hope someone will jump on me and tell me no. But and I hope that helps a little bit.
Keith, I appreciate that. I know this isn't really a time for discussion, but I appreciate that. I know that whether that money is sitting in the 115 trust or not, the actuarial studies or the actuaries that are done for PSPRS do not take this $552 million into account to determine the funding status, therefore to determine the employer contribution rates.
Correct. Thank you, Nate. We don't have a formal policy for how long we're allowed to have these speakers. I know sometimes they're limited to 3 or 5 minutes. I don't intend to limit anyone today because we don't have a formal plan, but I do see three more hands raised. Nate, thank you very much for your comments. If you don't mind, I'm going to move on to Jason Winsky then.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for your time. I will be brief and I will keep my comments under the 3 to 5 minute mark, I promise.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jason Winsky. I'm a veteran employee of the City of Tucson. I'm a sergeant with the police department. I'm a member of PSPRS. I have assets in the plan. I'm also a board member of the City of Tucson Defined Contribution Plan. I've been around the city long enough to know that you all can't respond. I think what I would like to ask, Mr. Chairman, is for a future agendized item that provides directly for PSPS PSPRS membership feedback. At the city of Tucson right now, we are about to see record-setting increases in the employer contribution rate. And, you know, I'm learning as I go. You know, I'm a relatively new member of our defined contribution plan. It hardly seems, Mr. Chairman, like an apples-to-apples comparison when we have city management that's about to tell the police and fire department that our bill, right, is about to dramatically increase to the tune of millions of dollars, right? That's a general fund obligation that if we eke out a percentage in returns for PSPRS, that somehow balances the books. And I'm not saying that the claim that's being made here, but I'm saying we were close to this. Mr. Chairman, I was in one of the very first meetings that ever occurred between city management and the labor associations on what the purpose of the 115 trust was. You yourself said earlier, Mr. Chairman, that that purpose seems to have evolved. I'm here to tell you, having been there since the beginning, it's evolved dramatically. I understand that economics have shifted. I understand that markets have shifted. I understand that there are major market swings happening right now, and I understand the strategy of being nimble. I also understand what the difference between a 72% and a 90% employer contribution rate is going to do to the police department's budget. That's a general fund obligation. So our employer expense increasing over and over, I fail to see, Mr. Chairman, where modest returns, even if they're modestly better than what PSPRS is doing, is going to make up that difference, sir. And I'll end with, you know, many years ago when I was in one of the very first meetings for the 115 plan, this was a one-year plan, and then it was a three-year plan, and then at some point it evolved, I heard, to a five-year plan. Mr. Chairman, you said yourself earlier in the meeting, it almost seems like the strategy now is to never wind the plan down, maybe entirely ever. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be smart enough to understand any of that. What I am going to say is that these evolving purposes of the 115 plan have not been effectively communicated to the employees putting money in it, and I know because that's my job. So what I would ask is for some partnership where as police officers here are not here to be adversarial. Our job is to educate our members and our officers about what's going on, really in particular with budgets, pay, compensation, pensions, and benefits, and working conditions. It has been a major goal as the deferred compensation plan has changed over staff and gotten new leadership to more effectively communicate with the employees, and we have done that. We've partnered with the city, and we've made great strides in communicating. So I would ask, I'll end with, you know, perhaps a future agendized item that could allow for some actual, just engagement back and forth, not at a call to the audience situation, so that we can figure out how to explain to the employees, you know, hey, we're on like 4.0 of the evolution of this 115 plan. Let's explain to you what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Jason. I appreciate that. We'll take those comments very seriously. And you are correct. At the beginning of the meeting, I was addressing what the purpose of the 115 trust was and whether it was one of its purposes was to mitigate those effects on the general fund spending from the increased required contribution to account for the underfunding in the fund. So I'm expecting to see additional information at future trust meetings about that. Thank you very much. Henry Gomez. Sorry if I pronounced names incorrectly.
No, that's fine. You did better than most, trust me. So I appreciate you guys allowing me to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, board members. Right now, I'm currently the president of the Tucson Police Officers Association. And to be quite frank, I'm getting ready to step down, and I'll keep my comments brief as well. I'm stepping down in the very near future to go to a different position, going back to teach at the academy. But mine's, I guess, more of a statement, not necessarily a question either. But I guess where my concern lies is with the police department in particular. I won't speak for fire, but the police department in particular, we are finally starting to see a little bit of an upswing with recruiting and retention. And I'm just wondering, you know, with these increased contribution rates of, you know, the 92%, and I can't remember what Nate said for the fire department, but I know that's increasing as well. What is that going to do to our already high ERE, employee-related expenses? I think last year we were hovering just above 2.04. So, you know, I'm wondering what is that going to do to our ERE in this next fiscal year, and how is that going to affect our ability to recruit and retain employees, buy assets, buy capital assets for the police department that are mandatory to be functional as a police department? You know, and obviously I'm wondering along the same lines of what Nate brought up, at what point do we cut our losses and just cut that check over to PSPRS? Because I do think that there is, you know, and I'm not pointing fingers. It's just kind of to piggyback off what Jason said, is this particular item is not being sufficiently communicated well to the people that are contributing to it and expecting at some point when they retire to have a retirement account to draw from. So I guess it's a two-part concern. How does this affect our ability in the next fiscal year to, in the short term, recruit and retain employees? If this is going to affect our ERE, those employee-related expenses, how is it going to affect our overall budget for this next fiscal year? And then how do we fix that problem of communicating what's going on with this money to our employees that are contributing to it? That's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much, Henry. I appreciate your comments today. It looks like my reading, we lost the fourth guest to comment. Maybe the comments were included by the other three. Is anyone else seeing any additional members of the audience that wish to comment today? I'd like to thank them for their participation. I am struggling. All of the ideas and concepts and opinions brought forward, I think, were very important for the management of the city's program and for our public safety system. I'm not certain that every issue that was brought up is a relevant issue for the 115 trust because of our limited management ability for what's in the trust, but I do hope and know and want to provide some assurance that these comments will be forwarded on to the appropriate people if the 115 trust is not the one to deal with a number of these issues that were brought up today. So I'm hoping I will take steps to ensure that they get communicated on. Are there any other trustees that want to make any comments about the call to the audience and any items that came up? All right. Thank you again for the audience participation. We appreciate hearing from the people that we serve. Item G, any future agenda items? Other than our regularly scheduled topics, which I imagine should include a better developed future plan for how the trust assets will be used, in particular, if there's any plan to offset general fund costs by the assets in the fund. Hopefully, those future, we can, when we look at a future financial plan for the 115 trust, at least in a planning way, explore how the future might look. I would appreciate that, I think. I'm not hearing any other future agenda items. I thought I researched this before the meeting, and I, just to be safe, I would love to have I'll entertain a motion at this time to adjourn from another trust member, trust board, trustee.
I'll move to adjourn. Oh.
I'll take the motion to adjourn from Anna and a second from Stacy, if that's appropriate.
That sounds good.
Are there anybody opposed to adjourning at this point? Thank you very much for a wonderful meeting. I think the motion passed that it's time for adjourning. We got a lot done. I am looking forward to very much our next meeting in February after 7 weeks after the close of the next quarter. So we will see everyone then. And thank you, Art, for all of your work helping to support us and everyone else that supports us, including our financial advisors and the trust managers. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Good to see you.
Thank you all. Happy holidays.